In a new edition of our art series, The Creative Way, host Vanessa Finney talks Shakespeare and gender with OSF playwright and performer Lisa Volpe.
Welcome to The Creative Way on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Vanessa Finney. Part of the enduring power of theater is how it gives insight into the human experience, years, sometimes even centuries after it was originally produced. Enter Shakespeare. Actors and audiences have been mining the gold of his work since the 1500s. Entire theater arts organizations are devoted to staging it, sometimes traditionally, sometimes reimagining settings and transmuting characters with the alchemy of interpretation. Enter a modern playwright.
I am the daughter of Hans Max Joachim Volpe. I am the daughter of Vera Angelica Wendell. I am.
That's Lisa Volpe, on stage in Ashland, Oregon. Volpe has made a life's work of studying Shakespeare and of examining how gender roles can limit us or liberate us, both on and off the stage. She was the founder and longtime producing artistic director of the Los Angeles Women's Shakespeare Company. As an actor, director, producer, and teacher, she's forged an international reputation in the field, most notably as one who defies gender conventions. She's played most of the canon's major male roles, and she's coached men on how to portray its female roles, all with the goal of creating the highest level of art. Volpe recently sat down with me to discuss her autobiographical solo show, Shakespeare and the Alchemy of Gender, currently running at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. In the play, she explores her personal history and connects it to larger issues, war, anti-Semitism, suicide among veterans, and gender discrimination. She connects it all in a way you might expect from a Shakespeare scholar, with well-known monologues from characters like Hamlet. In our interview, I asked her to explain the significance of that character in her own show. One of the through lines in the show is Shakespeare's male characters, especially many of whom you've played yourself, and how they embody different aspects of masculinity. Just to choose one, explain what the character Hamlet has to say about the strengths and weaknesses of man and the trials of being a man.
A lot of times people think Hamlet should be played as a woman because, you know, the lines have feminine endings, meaning they're not 10 syllables. They're 11 or 12, meaning that there's more emotion and thoughtfulness than a public speaker can handle in a rather stoic rhythm. But Hamlet is a philosopher and would inherit the throne. I mean, at the time in Denmark, you had to kind of be voted in. But nobody thinks he's a candidate for such a role because the role is predominantly one of the warrior archetype. And he's not a warrior archetype. He's a beautiful thinker. And he loves acting. And he loves to think about the afterlife. And he goes to Wittenberg, where mostly they think about, is there a purgatory or is it just heaven and hell? So he really is involved in the afterlife. And then suddenly the ghost of his father purportedly appears to him. And he's not sure if it's a demon who's trying to tempt him into hell or if it is his father. So he puts on a play called The Mousetrap, in which he finds evidence that, in fact, his uncle did kill his father, and his uncle did marry his mother, and his mother was working on the same plan and is enjoying the same benefits and didn't really love his father. And as a result, you see Hamlet treating his girlfriend like dirt, throwing Ophelia to the ground. And there's evidence in the text to say she's pregnant by him and that he's already promised her marriage. And then he says, no, go to a whorehouse. He says nunnery, but that's what that means. Mm-hmm. And he refuses to support her. And she commits suicide, being abandoned by him. So that toxicity is in Hamlet, but also the hope for maybe a third way of thinking about revenge, which is the main eye for an eye paradigm that leads nowhere for us in any year of our Lord. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in a way, Hamlet is a fascinating meditator, not like Macbeth, a person who thinks it and then does it. Macbeth aspires to have no gap between his malice and his action. He just wants to immediately take action. And Hamlet delays and delays and delays. So I think it's a really interesting, thoughtful track to play. And most people say it's the best role ever written in theater, ever. And I would agree.
It was that depth of writing, that attention to the fine details of emotion, that drew in Volpe as a teenager, just when she was trying to make sense of the world and of her own family's experiences. In the 40 years since, she's become known as a master/mistress of Shakespeare, not only finding a wealth of material she personally connected with, but realizing how universal his themes are. That's why they work so well to illustrate the ideas in her own show. Here's another clip from Shakespeare and the Alchemy of Gender.
Sometimes I think that Shakespeare saved my life. I fell in love with Shakespeare when I was just 19 years old. It was a time when I needed that bigger conversation in order to express what my own family was not willing to discuss. Lots of tragedies. I looked to Shakespeare to explore the theme. You know, if you take two Stradivarius violins and place them in opposite corners of the room and pluck the A string of one, the A string of the other one will start to vibrate in sympathy. That's how humans are. Our bodies are like tuning forks, and the more that we let love ring through us, the more healing we experience. Just running the language of Romeo and Juliet through my body opens and strengthens my heart. She speaks! Ah, speak again, bright angel, for thou art as glorious to this night being o'er my head as is a winged messenger of heaven.
For Volpe, the love between these characters works like alchemy to transform them. In fact, she finds wisdom throughout Shakespeare's canon that helps her process her own feelings. One of the things you say in the play is that his language expressed what your family would never discuss.
Shakespeare's language, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shakespeare really explores the human psyche in a beautiful way. Perhaps the cathedral of the English language. And complex men are really the bulk of what Shakespeare writes about. Most of the women are victim, girlfriend, whore, mother. Ambitious women are usually killed off stage or they commit suicide for the story at the time. But it's important to remember that men and boys played all the roles, so they had a limited understanding of what an actual woman put up with.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to The Creative Way on Jefferson Public Radio. I'm your host, Vanessa Finney. My guest today is Lisa Volpe, Shakespearean actor, director, and producer. We're discussing her solo show, currently running at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, entitled Shakespeare and the Alchemy of Gender. You can hear this interview in its entirety online at jeffexchange.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm actually currently exploring Mary Sidney's writing and Amelia Bassano Lanier's writing, women at the time that were very, very expressive. But of course, they were not allowed to publish, and they had to be very careful about asserting any kind of ambition or dominance in the time. So luckily, I think Shakespeare was a collaborative writer, and there are some beautiful shards of poetry that really express the weakness of men, the fragility of their hold on power. Richard II is famously written about Queen Elizabeth, who killed Essex, who was her lover, who put the play on as an affront to her power and her unwillingness to marry and give a man all of her stuff and power. So there was a kind of ongoing theme in the Shakespeare plays where the young girls are saying, I don't want to be sold like a cow. I'm in love with someone for real, and I don't want to be just a pawn in my daddy's fortune plan. And then stronger women who, unless they were widows who had a little bit of money of their own, most women were considered as a property of their husbands or their fathers. They were one soul shared by the man, and on their own, they were not considered worthy. So that's not true now. You and I are both working in the arts. But in order to claim stage time, where 80% of the lines in films today are still spoken by men, you really have to craft a piece that looks at the gender expectations, liberates our internal terrain, as I like to say, and affords us a bandwidth of exploration and cartography that places ourselves in the important question of what is human and why male dominance and how's that going for the world.
In her play, Volpe observes how that dominance played out in Elizabethan times. Artists and philosophers of the era knew about the ancient practice of alchemy and its goal of turning lead into gold. But instead of changing physical properties, Shakespeare's contemporaries tried to practice a more spiritual form of alchemy, the pursuit of enlightenment. Just one catch, only men were allowed to practice it. Here's how Volpe describes it on stage.
In Shakespeare's time, the alchemical goal of self-knowledge was represented as an androgynous ideal. All male companies of men and boys played all the roles, male and female, with the goal of gaining self-knowledge, advancing culture, and becoming better artists. And yet we can see that at the time, women were not allowed to write for a play on public stages in England. It was commonly believed that women did not have a soul. Our minds were thought to lack retention. My life in art would have been impossible.
That's partly why she originally established the multicultural Women's Shakespeare Company all those years ago in Los Angeles. She wanted to pursue that idea of advancing culture, but tipped the balance back toward people who had been historically left off stage. Here's how she describes it in The Alchemy of Gender.
Our mission was to bring women and girls' voices onto the stage and into the world. Our aim was to uplift the soul. The process requires a profound inward change, a rearrangement of body, soul, and spirit. The motive of this inward change is to create outward change, to rearrange the stuff of this world. When women work to achieve gender parity on the stage, we are reclaiming our place in our cultural history. This political work, this exploration of gender expectations, this liberation of our internal terrain is why I call myself an artist and an activist.
An artist, activist, and daughter. The Alchemy of Gender is dedicated to Volpe's father, a war hero with a doctorate in French literature who lost countless loved ones to the Holocaust. In the play, we learn that after Volpe does her family tree, she meets an uncle who asks her to tell her father's story. She reflects on stage about this responsibility of honoring her ancestors.
I ask myself, how shall I find enlightenment? By searching through the dark materials of my life. What is my experience? Where are the blinders in the way that I tell my stories? How shall I turn what I have learned into something of value, integrity, and service? And always the language of Shakespeare serves as a tuning fork to my sense of purpose.
All of us interpret the world through the lens of our own experience, according to our own sense of purpose. In her solo show, Volpe masterfully weaves soliloquies and statistics into a narrative that's both memoir and social commentary, a heaviness made lighter through the act of sharing it. Shakespeare and the Alchemy of Gender is directed by Laurie Woolery, and it runs through May 4th at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. You can learn more about Lisa Volpe and her extraordinary body of work at lisavolpe.org. That's Lisa, W-O-L-P-E.org. I'm Vanessa Finney. Thanks for listening to The Creative Way on Jefferson Public Radio. You can subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.